This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle here, not with the voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee, but for his second sojourn on the Goalkeepers Union podcast, it's Asmir Begovic. Asmir, welcome.
Well, Matthew, thank you for having me back. I must have been okay in the first one to have me back, so I appreciate it.
Very much so, very much so. Great to have you on. So we're going to cover off some of the World Cup action that has occurred over the past two rounds or so. But first, because it's been about a month or so, I think, since the Premier League had its hiatus for the World Cup in Qatar, you've been here and elsewhere, of course, in action. Just thought I'd get your take on how that month's been, what it's been like, schedules, timetables. What have you been up to?
Yeah, well, it's a bit of a unique year, isn't it? I mean, with the winter break and the World Cup happening at this time, it's been unusual for us, especially when you're used to playing in England. It's full pelt in the winter months, and obviously this year has been different. So we finished off, you're right, about a good month ago, you know, a good 4 or 5 weeks ago. We had our last game against Bournemouth on a Saturday. We then ended up going to Australia. So we had a couple of friendly games. We had a tour of Sydney. So we ended up flying over there. We played Celtic in a game, the Sydney Cup, first Sydney Cup. And then we played Western Sydney Wanderers.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So we ended up playing those two games, which was nice, actually. It was incredible to see so many Everton fans over there. I mean, I was blown away by the amount of fans we had and the support we had, especially in the first game, which was pretty amazing. So we won that on penalties and scraped through that. We won the second game 5-1. But I have to say, Sydney is a beautiful place. The climate was nice. It was nice to go into warmer weather. But the jet lag is real.
I mean, really? Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah,
the jet lag is brutal. I will fair play to people traveling over there, because we were there, I mean, eight nights. See, 3 or 4 travel days by the time, you know, so it ended up being a good 10-11 day trip. And I think the best night's sleep I had was in the last night, the night before we left.
It's mad, so because it's they say it takes an hour, right, yeah, every day. So I always wonder this, especially with pre-season, how conducive it is for teams to be going all over the world with their preseason programs and trying to remain fit and stay healthy, basically.
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky, right? I think your sort of an hour a day method is not far off. So we were there 8 nights, finally got to grips about a week in, so not far off, really. So we do the America trips, Asia trips, Australia trips in preseason. It's not ideal in the first couple of days, you know, by the time you get over jet lag and work on the fitness, so... but it is what it is. You get used to it. There's obviously a purpose to it. And it was a good trip. It was a good trip. Honestly, it was the first time I'd ever been in Australia. So it's nice to see somewhere new. And like I said, see so many of our fans, you know, which was pretty amazing for the club. So it was a good trip overall. And then, we came home and had a couple of weeks off, which was nice.
So does it feel strange at all having that month break and the fact that you're doing what you would ordinarily be doing in preseason? Has training changed? Has your prep changed? Or have you just carried on as you would have done?
No, it's been strange. It's been weird. I've not used to it. I had one when I was alone at Karabag. So in my 20 years in England, almost, I've had one sort of winter break. And that was in 2019 when I went to Karabag. And my loan finished early Jan. And their season had finished like in the 20th of December. So I had 2 weeks off, which was quite nice, to be honest. I went on a nice little winter holiday with the family. But that was the only time I'd ever been, you know, used to it. But again, it was just a little break, and then you go straight back into it. You know, games, training, all that kind of stuff. Where now, we've had a break. We're building back up, you know, ready to go, you know, as a Boxing Day. So I think it's definitely weird. It's a strange one, but all you can do is just crack on and see how we get on.
Yeah, do you think it will, a lot of people and onlookers have suggested it's almost like another preseason, and teams will come back radically different, but I don't think I see that. It's not been a big enough gap, I think, for teams to have completely changed the way that they were playing beforehand in terms of form, in terms of momentum. Do you think that will make a difference?
Well, I think for us, I mean, I'm hoping it does. You know, we obviously had a tough last week or so before the break. So for us, maybe the break came at a good time to regroup, obviously get away, you know, build a confidence a little bit with a couple of results that we got over there, and you know, get away from what, you know, what was maybe a bit of a difficult time. So I'd imagine if you're a team in full form and you know, getting good results, then you wouldn't want the break to come, right? So I think it goes both ways. So I'm hoping the break will do us good. I'm hoping we're going to be full strength for Wolves in a couple of weeks' time, and then we can really kick on the second half of the season.
Okay. Well, as I said, we are going to get into the nitty-gritty of the World Cup. But first, we've had a question in for you. Now, this is in response to the last time you came on the podcast.
Okay, let's go.
So let's do this. This was over Twitter by a gentleman named Greville Waterman, who is a big Brentford fan and an established author as well. He's released a few books, which are well worth a look. So check him out on Twitter at Grev Waterman. But he's put a question to you about a playoff game in 2021. He said, I enjoyed listening to Asmir Begovic on the latest pod. I would really like to understand his view on what happened in the 2021 playoff second leg at Brentford, when, without going into details, things happened which seemed very surprising. He's then gone on to say, I've always admired Asmir for his ability and for being so cool, calm and collected. I just wondered if his Brentford performance and behaviour was a calculated ploy or not. Yeah. So what's this all about?
Well, when you said Brentford fan, I knew exactly what was coming. Can we swear on this? We can't swear on this podcast.
I can bleep it out.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I'll keep it politically correct. But the first part of it was, obviously, it's the second leg of a playoff game. And we did okay. We won the first leg 1-0. And then we go 1-0 up. And then just the penalty decision. Obviously, we go 1-0 up. And then 5 minutes later, there's a penalty decision. And for me, to this day, I still don't think it's a penalty. Of course, I would say that. But I still don't think it's an intentional handball by Lloyd Kelly. And the referee couldn't be quick enough to blow his whistle. So I'm obviously there speaking to before the game, and he said to the captains, if you have anything to say, come and ask me. So he blew his whistle without even thinking, and I'd seen it perfectly. The ball nicked off his knee and hit his hand, and his hand wasn't really out in a natural position. So the ball hits, and boom, penalty. I said to him, I think Jared is an Aussie referee, and I said to him, oh, calm down. Have you asked your assistant? Let's talk about this. Are you sure it's a pen? It's a big decision, big game. It's like, I know what I saw. I know what I saw. Get away. Get out of here. I know exactly what I saw, and this is a decision. So I'm like, all right. So that ticked me off right away. So that made me see red in such a big game. Like, talk about it. Speak to your assistant and, like, get the decision right, because there's no VAR.
Yeah.
No VAR. So go talk about it. But the way he dismissed it, so that absolutely blew my lid off. And then obviously Ivan Toney scored, and all I ever thought about was just getting that ball and just kicking it out of the stadium. And obviously Ivan took it, and so I chased him down. And
that's my memory.
Yeah.
See, I haven't actually looked back at the footage.
I just wanted to hit him, like, but, yeah. It was just a bit of a, you know, red mist type of thing. Nothing against Ivan Toney or anything. It was just one of those moments. And then after that, again, I think it was 5 or 10 minutes later, boom, we get a man sent off. Last man. We're down to one center half. We're hanging on for dear life for the rest of the game. And of course, you use every trick in a book. I mean, I had plenty more tricks in my book to go down. But I wish we would have, you know, absolutely milked it, because we were against the Brentford. You know, they had the crowd that day, you know, not the whole stadium, but it was a good crowd after COVID. So they were firing on all cylinders, and we're up against it, like no defenders, up against the, you know, the caution. You know, that's what you're trying to do. Try and get a game, trying to win a game in any way, shape or possible, way, shape or form. And anything I could have milked, any contact, you go down, you take time in your throw-ins, all this kind of stuff, and it's part of the game, really. So nothing more than that in terms of the second part, but unfortunately it didn't work for us in the day.
Who would have thought it? The cool, calm and collected Asmir Begovic.
Yeah, just really the attitude from the referee. I mean, I still to this day, actually I saw him in Sydney, because he's Australian, he refereed the game. I said,
no.
So we laughed about it. We obviously kissed and made up. I said to him, like, you really ticked me off that day, like, you know, especially because I didn't go into him in an aggressive, you know, manner. So let's talk about this. Let's speak to your assistant. Are you sure, 100% sure? Is he sure? Because it's not like he weighed, you know, maybe he can see it differently. But anyway, that's life.
Do you know what? I can understand footballers' emotions at those times. You know, when people seem to think there's a certain way that footballers have to behave because you're role models for kids, et cetera, et cetera. But when there is so much on the line in a game like that, and the decision that you absolutely think yourself is wrong, is unjust, I completely understand. I would lose my head.
Yeah, but also, Matt, I remember that after this, for the sending off, obviously, then our players, because of the penalty, they charged at him and were, you know, going after him, and I protected him. You know, you can see the television. I protected him, kept my players away. I know I was captain on the day, but kept my players away. I wanted to deal with it, you know, in a respectful manner towards him, and I did. And it was actually flagged in a referees meeting the year after, you know, by Andre. I think Andre Mariner was doing it. Said, this is what we, you know, if players come, please help us, captains. And all kind of, so they asked for respect in one way. I didn't quite get the respect in the first thing. So it's just disappointing. And obviously, if you say, like you say, there's a lot riding on the game, and we're there to get a result, you know. Unfortunately, we're not there to please people, and we're away from home trying to get a, you know, game into that time, into extra time, or try and get over the line, try and get to the final, and we had to use every trick in the book. And we probably could have been a little bit more clever that day and done more things to kill the game, but, you know, it wasn't meant to be.
Okay, well, hopefully that, well, I think it definitely has.
Well, there you answered. Go. I hope it's answered the question, right? Any more for next time? Send them through.
Send them through. Hello at goalkeepersunion.net. On Twitter at GK Union, or on our phone number 07503 673 020. On with the show.
Let's do it.
Okay, so we are going to recap the World Cup. The Championship has come back this weekend, but we'll leave that for one more week and get going again with the full complement as and when the Premier League returns, I think. But we'll start. Actually, first and foremost, have you been watching much of the World Cup? How has that been going for you?
I have. I've certainly watched a lot more recently, with the games kind of being at good times of the day for me. Missed that first week in Australia. Those games were in the middle of the night, so I had to watch them on replay or the highlights. And then when I had a little break, obviously I was quite tied up with the family, so I caught up as much as I could on the games. But recently I've watched a lot of them and enjoyed it, to be fair.
Okay, well, we will start with your teammate, England and Everton goalkeeper Jordan Pickford. And look, this is an English podcast. I'm not going to lie.
Speaking of referees, Matthew.
Yeah, exactly. Do you know what? I thought I was beyond this as well. I didn't think it was going to affect me as much as it has done. But the past couple of days have been tough. They've been tough. But your take on Jordan during the France game, a couple of good saves in that one, a decent save from Olivier Giroud, one from Rabiot as well when he was cleaned through. Yep. And your take on him throughout the tournament. There was a brilliant save from the round of 16 game against Senegal as well that kind of went unnoticed at the time, but only on reflection over social media of people seeing what a save that was from him.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think for JP, a really good tournament, I thought. I thought he was very clean, everything that he did. I don't recall any errors. Of course, I don't think he let the team down in any way, shape, or form. I think he performed it to his usual high standards, and especially for England. I think we look at the major tournaments. I think for England, I think over the years, I mean, oh my God, I think honestly he's been really faultless. I can't remember any time he's let his country down. And I thought this continued really in the tournament. He was a really good presence for the team. Obviously, maybe one of the more senior lads now, can we say. So I think he played really, really well in the tournament. I think he cemented his place kind of as England number one, really, and confirmed everything that we all knew and the qualities that he's had for England before, and obviously the qualities that he currently has. So I think really good tournament for him.
Did you speak to him at all during his time out there?
No, I didn't. I didn't want to bother him, obviously, sent him a good luck message ahead of the tournament. But with all those games coming really thick and fast, I thought, let's not bother him. He's under, I'm sure, enough pressure and things like that and things going on over there. So I let him be. I look forward to obviously seeing him when he comes back. You know, wish he would have come back a little bit later, of course, for him. And England, sad to see him go out in the quarterfinals. But, you know, that's football. But overall, like I said, I think he had a really good tournament. I thought he played really well against France. A couple of those saves were, you know, good. For him, obviously, it's nothing we wouldn't expect anything less. I thought the Rabiot one with the ball bouncing right in front of him was especially good and looked kind of just normal for him, comfortable, which is a sign of a really good goalkeeper.
It's funny, isn't it? Because you're right there. The saves were saves that, coin a cliche, you'd expect him to make. And you'd expect to hear that from the commentary, probably at any other moment, but because of the magnitude of the game, because of the time he made that save, especially from Giroud, it's what a save, outstanding save from Pickford, which is great to hear, yeah. But ordinarily it would be straight at him or expected to save it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, because it's England and, you know, you're trying to hype it all up a little bit. And I thought it was, fantastic to hear. Very refreshing, as you say. But yeah, I think Jordan was really solid. He proved once again why he's been in that position for many years now for England. And, you know, I don't see why it wouldn't continue for a little while longer.
Have you played Fortnite with him, by the way? Is it a thing that he's big into it? Because I saw that a big rig, like a PC rig, was shipped out to Qatar so he could play it.
I think he likes his video games and bits and pieces. I know he likes his golf, so I don't know whether he managed to play any golf while he was out there. But no, I'm not into video games. Those days are gone.
Yeah.
So no playing Fortnite with him.
In the same game, at the opposite end, Hugo Lloris. Let's get your take on him. We'll talk about the penalties too. A couple from Harry Kane, of course. I'd like to get your take, actually. From a goalkeeper's perspective, if you were Hugo Lloris for both of those penalties, what would you have done?
Well, I want to start with one thing. I think with Hugo Lloris, people find him a bit of a weak link.
Weak link, bonkers.
Let's put a little bit of respect on Hugo Lloris's name, right? So, you know, he's a top-level goalkeeper. I think he set the record for caps.
He did, 143.
Right,
yes.
So the record wasn't tied, he set the record. So that's unbelievable. Obviously, captain from France, captain for Spurs. So let's clear that up. He's a top-level goalkeeper for me. But as for the penalties, I mean, only he will know, right? He will know because he gets to train with Harry Kane every day and has done so for many years. I think when you look at it, obviously he would have known that maybe that side was his popular side, which may be why he went the other way. That's the mind games for the first penalty. And then the second one becomes real poker because you go the same way or do you expect them to change? So maybe Harry just out of the side of his eye, corner of his eye, maybe saw him go that way and that was his preferred side. I'm really surprised Harry Kane didn't go down the middle.
100%.
I don't know. Yeah. I had this feeling he was going to go down the middle. And I was thinking, is Hugo going to stand? Is he going to have the cojones to stand there and take it? And then obviously what happened. But that was just my thinking going in.
I completely agree with you because I think that for Hugo Lloris there, it's almost a no-lose situation, I think, because he's dived to his left for the first one, knowing that Harry Kane generally goes to his right, but like you said, try to play the game. He had to dive. There was no way that Hugo Lloris could stay still for that second penalty, so he had to dive again, and he put everything. Because if Harry Kane does what he did for the first penalty, which he tried to do, it's almost impossible for any goalkeeper to save it. So all you can do is what Hugo Lloris did, right, was just fly himself across the goal, right? That's what he tried to do.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that, Matt, actually, just to follow up on that. If you look at Hugo's position, he started slightly behind the line, or it's definitely on the back end of the line to give himself that chance to really push off. So he obviously had something in his head about where he was going to go, maybe what he was trying to do with Harry Kane and the mind games and everything else that goes into a penalty at that stage of the game. So I think there was definite like intention exactly about what he wanted to do and what he tried to execute.
So yeah, had he gone down the middle, Harry Kane, he obviously would have scored, but he didn't, and France went on to win the game. So yeah, we'll move on swiftly from that, shall we? But actually, it's talking about Hugo Lloris, 143 caps, like you say. It was 119th, I believe, as captain, which is incredible. He made his debut in 2008. And there has been a lot of chat about him being the weak link and, yeah, just ridiculous. But I was reading a quote from him. I went and looked back at some of his comments because he is quite an understated chap, isn't he? He's not
just
front
what
and
I love.
Center.
I love that about goalkeepers. You do your business, get on with it. Try and be as calm and as collected as possible. And that's what Hugo Lloris has done for so many years.
And because someone is like that, there's almost what is it about him? There's nothing about him. He's a family man. He likes to keep himself to himself. But there was a brilliant quote I read where he said, "In truth, the goalkeeper takes shape save after save, game after game, club after club. Take Fabian Barthez, a legend for us. Every time he made a save, I thought, Barthez did it. The man did it. Even though this save is technically similar to dozens of others, in fact, it is different. Because the man who made it is a man unlike the others. Within this save is Barthez's past, the failures that built him, the experience he gathered."
Very wise.
That's great, isn't it?
Yeah, fantastic.
It encapsulates it all. But we'll move on to Morocco beating Portugal. It was Youssef En-Nesyri who rose above Diogo Costa, who, as a result, on commentary and in punditry too at half time, took a bit of flack for that one.
Yeah, it was unfortunate. I mean, he's obviously an incredible young goalkeeper coming through. I really come through the ranks at Porto and claimed that number one spot for the national team. I mean, and actually a really competitive national team side in terms of goalkeepers and the other, you know, goalkeepers that are playing in and around Europe. So spot that Rui Patricio had for many years, Jose Sa coming through, Anthony Lopez. So a lot of goalkeepers, Rui Silva coming through. Yeah, geez, so there's quite a lot of Portuguese goalkeepers playing at a high level. He's obviously claimed that shirt, so he's got a great future. But yeah, a moment to forget, and especially in a game like that that got decided by one goal. He came and then didn't conquer, I guess, didn't take it. And I think I looked at it again, slightly deep on the starting position, again, depending who you ask. I mean, I like to play a little bit higher. Maybe he likes to be a little deeper and be able to sprint and use his speed. And then if you go, you have to go and take everything. You know, you have to take the ball, you have to take the man, everything that's in your way. If you can't, you know, if you can't just get the ball, you know, you have to try and do something to obviously put him off. And unfortunately, he didn't do either.
So in this scenario as well, there were a lot of comments about the fact that El Nassiri rose higher. And everyone always says this, if goalkeepers have their hands, how is it that an attacker or an opposing player or an outfielder can head the ball higher than the goalkeeper can reach? What's the science? What's the technique behind
that? Well, I think, you know, I will tell you now, okay, yes, I'm 6'6", I have long arms, but, you know, when it comes to cross-taking, as much as it's about technique, really it's about the angle you go and attack the ball and the lane you take. So if he goes a little bit more directly to the ball, of course, yeah, the striker's jump is incredible, and the players now are such good athletes, they jump higher than ever and they can attack the ball on higher stages. So you have to understand that your angle of attack for that ball has to be incredibly spot on. So I think if he doesn't go around and he goes directly to the ball, he has a better chance to get there ahead of him, obviously to punch it away or claim or whatever he needed to do, whatever decision he decided to make. But when you go around and the attacker has the line and has a better run-up and better angle to the ball, then, of course, you can do anything you want, have arms, jump as high as you can. But if he has that angle and that better attack of the ball, then you're never going to get there.
At the opposite end, Bono, a hero in the last round against Spain, a hero again here, made a great save from Joao Felix in that game, another one from Ronaldo as well. He has been not a revelation, because this is a guy who has won the Zamora Trophy last season in La Liga, a very good goalkeeper, highly rated, and is doing a job, isn't he, in Qatar?
Certainly is. I mean, he's a fascinating case. I mean, I played against Bono in the Europa League in 2019 for Karabag, and I remember him from those days. Funny enough, I was doing a game for BBC 5 Live when they played Man City at the Etihad. And the fascinating thing about him is, and almost I look at Morocco, they play in a very chaotic way, right? Yeah. You know, I don't know which way to describe it. You know, guys were talking about, who's this Bono? Like, I've seen him play many times, played against him. He's incredibly efficient, but he does it in like a controlled, chaotic way. It's really, really strange. And, you know, the way that the positions they put himself in, like, oh my God, you know, your heart's beating. And then he just like handles it. He's cool, calm, and that's kind of his normal. And, you know, I think he's very unorthodox at times, but he's incredibly efficient and obviously he's getting the job done incredibly, incredibly well.
So how, I guess you're trained in a certain way to be a goalkeeper. How has he come about to play like that then? Because like you said, it's a controlled chaos in a way.
Well, he would have obviously, the way he was trained as a youngster, the way he feels natural in terms of his movements, his body, the way he wants to play the game. So he'll obviously, you know, as you get to a high level, not everyone plays the game in the same way. Everyone has their own style, their own ways and beliefs. You know, of course, their own physical stature. So that all plays a role. And obviously, he plays the game this way. Then, of course, comes the team part. You know, if they want to play possession and they want to do some risky things that we would deem risky, but for him is comfortable, then that's a choice they make. And that's obviously a collective decision. So I think all of these factors play a role. You know, for me, I would have probably cleared my lines a few more times than he has, but he's very comfortable in those positions and obviously doesn't mind the pressure.
Hasn't actually conceded a goal from an opposing player in normal time and extra time yet. The only goal he's conceded was an own goal against Canada, a country he could have played for. I think he was born in Montreal, wasn't he? But yeah, and also the first African goalkeeper to keep 3 clean sheets in a World Cup.
So impressive.
So good, isn't it?
Impressive, yeah. I mean, what he's done, what that whole team's done. It's been so, you know, remarkable. I guess the first African nation to be in the semis. Is that right?
I believe so, yeah.
So fair play to him.
And also a goal-scoring keeper, of course. So something you have in common.
Absolutely. The more the merrier, right? So fair play to him.
We've got another one coming up, actually, a bit later in the show. But will thou go on to penalties galore in the two Friday games? So we'll do Croatia, Brazil first. Now, Dominic Livakovic. So 11 saves for him in this game. That is more saves than any Croatia goalkeeper has ever made in a World Cup match. Another penalty save in the shootout too. He is another goalkeeper again who, you know, is well established, Dinamo Zagreb, but is someone who, in terms of this platform that he's given, loads of people are starting to talk about him again.
He's like the new Guillermo Ochoa, isn't he?
There you go, yeah.
They love the tournaments, don't they? So, well, this is for you know, for any player, that's why you want to play in a World Cup, because it's the biggest stage and everything gets highlighted, of course, positively or negatively. And Dominic's no different. The fact they've had an incredible run. He's claimed that spot back. He was out of the team a while ago. You know, he wasn't that set to be playing for Croatia as the number one in the tournament. In the qualifiers, he didn't play all the games. So for him to come back like this and really perform at this level is incredibly impressive. And I think when you look at that game against Brazil, I think if you scout Brazil and know what they do, their little combinations, their 1-2s, the way they like to kind of go through the middle and Man City-esque in a way, you have to understand that your positioning, especially your one-on-ones, have to be incredibly strong in that game. And I thought he was absolutely faultless. You know, his positioning, the way he attacked the ball, the decisions he made to go and challenge the attacker or stay on his line was very, very impressive. And I think his one-on-ones in that game were exactly where you needed to be. And even the goal against Neymar, I thought he did really well. He closed down, didn't make a foul and commit. And of course, Neymar has that quality to really take it around him and make it a more difficult finish, but still execute and score the goal. So I thought he was you know, faultless throughout the game.
You mentioned Guillermo Ochoa there, and we see this, don't we? Every tournament there is a goalkeeper that really stands out. Is there something in that, or is it just that we don't see these goalkeepers week in, week out here, or is it that they have this stage and they play over and above?
Well, you know, this stage means a lot more. You know, of course, as you rightly say, are we watching the Croatian League every week? I mean, I'll probably watch it a bit more than you, I imagine. So from a world point of view, people, who is Livakovic? You know, who are some of these players? Because it's all about top five leagues, Premier League, you know, and people, that's where people watch you week in and week out. So when you don't see these guys, you see them in the European game maybe. I thought he played well against Chelsea in, you know, a couple games this year, but you know, that's where you get the chance to perform and really show your qualities to the rest of the world. And I think that's what he's been able to do. Of course, it's great when you get the results and the team, and now you're in the semifinal and get to play on an even bigger stage, and Argentina's next. And if you can stop Messi, then, you know, your stock rises incredibly fast. And, you know, it's great to see.
He's also the third goalkeeper to make 3 saves and a single World Cup penalty shootout. Do you know the 2 others?
Oh, gosh.
Cheeky little quiz for you. See, Richard Lee has this.
Yeah.
And he normally fails.
pop quiz. I like these pop quizzes. Yeah, I never liked them at school. So, well, Lehmann didn't do it in 2006, no.
There is one from 2006. The other one's from 2018. It's tough. It's a tough question.
Yeah, let's move on.
So one was against England. It was Ricardo of Portugal, who I believe used to take his gloves off, didn't he, in those penalty shootouts. And
hold on, did he save 3 or did we miss? Did England, well, not England?
No, he saved. He saved 3. Yeah, I was actually at that game.
Oh, okay, so yeah. Of course,
you remember it. Yeah, and Daniel Subasic, the Croatian goalkeeper, that was against Denmark. So 2 Croatians in that
there
one.
There you go. Some things in the water.
Yeah, Alisson. We should talk about 2 because 6 shots on target he faced against South Korea, only 1 on target in that Croatia game. For the first 2 games, none at all. So he's only faced 7 shots on target throughout the entire tournament for him.
Football for you.
Right, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, going into the game and even the Croatia game, I thought Brazil probably looking like the best team in the tournament. Can we, you know, I think we can agree on that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Full control of the games, really, perform really well. And there you go. In a one-off game, knockout game, anything can happen. So I think Alisson, again, pretty spotless in his performance. Very good. Quality was there. Made the saves when he had to. But yeah, with that much control in the games and dominance in a way, it's incredibly bizarre that they're not in the semifinal.
Who would you have gone with, by the way, just out of interest?
Well, I think, not to choose, but Alisson has been the number one. I think he's played more of the games for Brazil. So I think he was always going to play. Really nice touch to give the other two boys minutes, you know. That's a nice touch from the manager and obviously shows a bit of respect towards the lads as well and the work they've done for the not just the tournament but for the qualifying and probably the years past. So that was a nice touch. But, yeah, Alisson was always going to be, I think, the number one.
It's difficult to do that, isn't it, to give all three goalkeepers minutes? Because I was thinking in the Senegal game, really, I thought, I wonder if he might just give Nick Pope 5 minutes here or Aaron Ramsdale 5 minutes here. But it's a hard thing to do, isn't it? Because you kind of are veering on that line of taking the mic.
I think that third group game is the only chance.
Yeah.
I don't think in a knockout game you ever would do that. I think that third game is the only chance. And obviously Brazil, you know, used that chance to make those decisions and give those minutes to the players. But, yeah. I'm sure Nick Pope and Aaron Ramsey will get their chance at some point in the future.
At some point, let's hope so. And let's go on to the Netherlands v Argentina. Now, there was needle, there was bite, there was atmosphere. I loved every minute of this game. And I have to say that the penalty shootouts I've watched thus far before this game, there's been the mutual respect between goalkeepers. There's been a handshake, there's been a hug, there's been a, you know, all the best to you, mate. Best of luck. I hope this goes okay for you. We want to win, but, you know, we're pals. With this one, you just sensed that didn't really exist. You had Emi Martinez and Andries Noppert. And there was a handshake, but it was very much a quick one. You go do your thing. I'll do mine.
Well, I think the bad blood started before the game, didn't it? With all the build-up and very much carried into the game. And as the game went on, it grew and grew. And obviously all the players and staff and everyone. So there was never going to be any pleasantries, I think. It was win at all costs. Kind of what we said earlier about, you know, you're there to get a result. They're using every trick in the book to try and get it under each other's skin and get one over the other team. And obviously get into the semifinal. And Argentina got there in the end. And I think in terms of goalkeepers, you try, listen, you try your best to be calm and everything, but listen, emotion, and I can only imagine at that level, how many, 70,000, 80,000 people probably there, everything that's going on into that game is very difficult to keep absolutely cool, calm and collected. So I think there was always going to be a bit of emotion running wild.
Have you encountered Emi Martinez before? Have you played against him?
I've played against Emi, yeah. I mean, we've always got on okay. We've played against each other a couple times, I think. Very respectful. We always shake hands, give each other a hug after the game, mutual respect. So I've never had any issues, but, you know, I didn't take him off in any way, shape or form before either.
He was in the zone, wasn't he? And we've seen this before. We saw it at the Copa America a couple of years ago, and we saw it in that game, just in the zone. When he saved the penalty, he was in the zone, cheering with the fans, just looked so focused. And also, a couple that he conceded, he was still smiling, still laughing, just getting on with it. But always he succeeds. I think it was the second penalty, wasn't it, from Berghaus, where he kicked the ball away like a petulant child. The ball was on the spot and he kicked it away and made Berghaus go and get it. And you could just tell that affected him.
Yeah, I mean, surprised maybe the yellow cards weren't branded out or a bit more, you know, but I guess he was probably past that. So I think, yeah, like he played those tricks, used any trick in the book and you know, did what he had to do. Obviously with Emi, you look at his past, you talk about Copa America, some of his Aston Villa performances, that's what he's like. He's a bit more extravagant, he's a bit more out there, you know, shows emotion, expressed himself. Obviously this penalty saves were fantastic. They weren't, you know, he had to go full out to get these. And I thought that was impressive. Is, you know, each to their own in terms of like his little dance after. You know, that's
not one for you. No?
Not one for me. No, you wouldn't want to see my moves. No, absolutely not. So that's each their own. You know, you can never tell anyone, don't do this, don't do that, because if that's his personality coming out and that's how he feels normal and natural and what makes him feel comfortable, obviously, to perform well, then that comes with it.
How many have you taken part in before penalty shootouts? Or I guess more to the point, what's a penalty shootout like for you? Do you have a specific way of approaching them?
Well, there's a lot. I mean, I think every penalty shootout, you know, we had one in Australia. Was there much pressure on it? Probably not. You know, if you're doing one in a cup competition, again, what's the pressure like? Again, and then you go to the next level, World Cup, quarterfinal. Each scenario is one of its own. You know, will a player stick to their side? Will they go to the other side? Obviously, you for these one-off games, you don't leave any stone unearthed, really, or unturned. So I think you have to look at every single detail. You probably look at 100 penalties, and sometimes it can be a little bit paralysis by analysis, is that, you know, we can call it. So what happens in that moment? Do you have a special feeling? You know, I think so many things go on that it's really difficult to describe and prepare for.
Well, it's interesting that because the cameras caught, it was Livakovic before the shootout against Brazil, where he was in the dugout looking, I don't know whether it was an iPad or something that he was looking at with clearly the statistics. And then in the Argentina-Holland game, you had Andries Noppert, who was, I believe, it looked like he was looking at a water bottle, or the other goalkeepers were sticking stuff on there as if to say, right, these are the stats. But interestingly, he didn't really get anywhere near any of the penalties, bar one, I think, which was the one that was hit wide. He went the same side. But apart from that, he wasn't close.
Well, Matt, honestly, I've been in there in these shootouts when you get all this information, whether it's in a water bottle, whether it's in an iPad, whatever it is you can remember. And that the stats will tell me to go right. I go right, the taker goes left. Mm. It can happen. Like I said, it's the mind games. You will go, I'm sure the taker knows, well, I've hit it there 9 out of 10 times. He's going to think, I'm going there again, so I'll go the other side, right? It is a lottery at the end of the day, and that's why when people say it's good, you know, it's an easy save or goalkeeper should save, no, like there's so much that goes into a penalty. And then you can't even describe, I think, the level of penalty at this stage. When when you're playing league games, of course you're watching like penalties, but you're not going to watch them 100 times. But when you know it's a World Cup quarterfinal, like you would have the goalkeeper coaches, goalkeepers together in a group, like you would have watched this a million times to be as prepared as you can. And it comes down to it, yeah. Study his hand movement, study his body movement, you know, his history. He goes the other way or something else. It can happen. So it's always very difficult.
And Andries Noppert, we spoke about him in the first of these World Cup pods that we did. I have to admit, I'd not heard of him before. I looked into his story. And of course, every time Holland have played, his story has been told by the commentator in one way or another. From watching him, I thought he looked so calm, so composed, very decent on the ball, a lovely left peg, commanding in the air. He just looked like a very solid goalkeeper.
Honestly, again, a very good tournament for him.
Yeah.
I mean, came out of nowhere. I think the Dutch goalkeeping situation has been weird for the last 2-3 years. You know, a lot of oohing and throwing and changing around. You know, everyone, so many, Krul, Bizo, Cillessen, Pasveer, I think they've all played, haven't they? So it's just been a little bit bizarre. So he obviously took the spot. I thought the Dutch were impressive. He was impressive, calm, didn't let the Dutch down in any way, shape, or form. And then penalties are penalties. A lottery, like I say, it could have happened. He could have been told to go this way, and then the ball goes the other way. So I wouldn't look at him in any way, shape, or form, any blame his way or anything like that. But overall, a great tournament for someone who's just coming to the team really for the tournament.
Quite like the antics with Messi. Of all the players to try and psych out, you could tell Messi was just like, whatever, mate, I'm not having this. Yeah,
Didn't seem too fazed, did he?
No.
Yeah. Worth a try, though. God loves a try, right?
And a wingspan, just to finish on him, a wingspan of 2.2 metres. We kept hearing that. I mean, that's epic, isn't it?
Well, I thought that would, you know, that's a good thing for us, bigger ones, you know, if it's going to be a penalty, and especially if you can guess or take the right side, it's going to be a heck of a penalty to beat you. And I thought, you know, if he did get it right, it would have been one heck of a penalty to beat him, and it would have been placed either top or bottom corner. And yeah, unfortunately, it didn't quite work out his way, and Emmy got the better of him.
Okay, so we are now at the semi-final stage. Of course, everything you've seen from the teams remaining in the tournament, can I put you on the spot for who are you plumping for?
I'll go for France.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, they're a deep, deep squad. I mean, but then logic in the tournament has gone out the window a little bit, you know. I think, like I said, Brazil looked like the best team. They've gone out. You look at France, I mean, geez, you know. Can you imagine, like, the players that are actually not there, if
exactly.
They were there as well?
Yeah.
But you look at France, and I think they'll get it done. What do you think?
Obviously
now with England, yeah.
Because England have gone.
Yeah.
I don't want one of the big countries, to win it. Yeah, I would rather have Morocco.
Yeah, I'd rather, but I don't think they will. I would love for Morocco to win it.
That's what I want. That's what I'm hoping for, but I agree.
Tell me, obviously I haven't seen you since the tournament. Who's been sort of your standout goalkeeper who you think's done really well?
I think you've got Livakovic, you've got Bono, because clearly they are making the headlines. We spoke a lot about Lawrence Atizigi, the Ghana goalkeeper, who has been eventful to watch. Like, that's what I look for in a tournament. I think I look for goalkeepers who, like a Campos, you know, you think of 94, you colourful. Think of the colourful type of jersey, all that sort of stuff. And also, I thought Chesney was very good.
You know, I'm glad you said him.
Yeah.
I wanted to kind of give a special mention for him. I think, well, Juventus, there's been a lot of stuff going on, obviously, in the lineup, but I thought, special mention to him. I thought he had a fantastic, I mean, had Poland gone a bit further as a team, you know, he could have been up there for a player of the tournament because he single-handedly kept them in it, didn't he? So
absolutely,
what a performance!
Such a, I'm going to say they're a boring team. It was difficult to watch Poland, especially when they got through the group stages. You thought that's
especially for the players.
So poor. But he was very good. And let's touch on that actually, because all the stuff that's happened at Juve, the perception of Chesney here that fans have of him, that he's a bit of a joker, a bit of a character. But in terms of his goalkeeping ability, where do you have him?
Yeah, I mean, he's a top goalkeeper. You know, I really don't like the whole ranking thing. I mean, how is someone better? It's so tough, like, and almost a bit of a disrespect sometimes to some of the goalkeepers. But he's a top goalkeeper. Listen, you don't play for Arsenal, whatever you think of him. Like, people who are making decisions are obviously bringing him in to play. And you don't play at Arsenal, Roma, and then Juventus for all these years. And you know, you're anything less than high quality and top class. You know, of course... as he had the accolades, and I think it sometimes goes with team success. Had Juventus had maybe that European breakthrough and success, he would have maybe given a little bit more recognition. You know, I think that was the big thing for Thibaut, because he always had that. Atletico did well in Europe, and then Chelsea had a couple runs, and then of course Real Madrid winning these trophies. It puts you on a different level. So I think Wojciech hasn't quite had that. Similar maybe to Hugo Lloris. You know, I think if Spurs had done that a little bit more, you get a little bit more respect and recognition too, right? And that's kind of where Wojciech is. But overall, you know, a high-level goalkeeper. And I really was really pleased for him to have a really good tournament. And it's nice for people to recognize it.
So do you think that's what it takes? It takes winning a trophy to actually get that respect?
I think perception plays a big role. I think perception plays a big role. It does. I mean, there's no getting away from it, you know. Until you really prove yourself at the highest level. And, you know, what do the people always measure you by? Oh, well, how many trophies have you won? What have you done? How many golden gloves? Or these are things that people ultimately sort of judge you on. Now, we, inside the game, you know, we talk on this podcast. I listen to you guys, and you and Rich all the time on the podcast, of course. You guys are people who understand and have great knowledge of the position and the game, and you can respect different things. But I think in the outside world, if you're judged, and you know, how many times you hear Chesney, when people say, oh, who's the best goalkeeper, who's top five, who's top 10, don't hear Chesney very often. Mm. But really, you know, you're playing for a big club, big pressure, big expectation, big tradition. So to be there and playing week in and week out for years with Gigi Buffon and other guys, you know, it's not a walk in the park.
With all things considered then, in terms of you not being favourable of rankings, are you in favour of the Yashin Trophy? Do you think that's a good thing that's coming because it's able to recognise goalkeepers in that whole Ballon d'Or thing?
Definitely, definitely. I mean, I think Thibaut had a great point about the Ballon d'Or. I think the Ballon d'Or is outdated in different ways. You know, especially, okay, we're biased, we're goalkeepers, but, you know, why can't the goalkeeper even be in the shortlist? You know, like what Neuer did for Bayern for many years. Like, you know, he helped win that Champions League just as much as anyone. I know it was like COVID year or whatever, but he was there, like, absolutely. I mean, I was there for the Champions League final, and what Thibaut did, I mean, you know, if it was another player and if it was Messi or someone, he'd say, oh, he single-handedly won him the trophy. Mm. Thibaut almost single-handedly won that Champions League final. I mean, so I don't think we quite get the recognition. Of course you don't. So I think having that sort of trophy is nice.
Right, just to finish up, we've got a few bits of fun and games. You mentioned actually Manuel Neuer there, so we'll start on him. Not particularly fun and games, although he was seemingly having fun and games in the break between going out of the World Cup and returning to action. But the latter he won't be doing because he's broken his leg skiing, which is awful. And we go out to you, Manuel Neuer, get better soon. But your take really on this, because there has been an element of criticism that he was actually allowed to go skiing in the first place.
Well, that's something you and I won't know all the ins and outs. I mean,
yeah.
My contract doesn't allow me to, but
do you have things written into your contract? Yeah. Then there's certain extreme sports that you can't do.
I think if you get injured in certain things, and then the club could have the right to void the contract. So, I think if I did it, Everton probably tell me not to come back. So, see you later. But obviously, Manu Noir is a different kettle of fish. So, I don't know what the ins and outs of that. Just sad to see, you know. Obviously, been a difficult couple of weeks for him. You know, I think with Germany going out. And then having that accident, you know, we can only wish him a very speedy recovery and hopefully comes back to the highest level.
It's a late age as well, isn't it, to have a broken leg?
Never ideal, but especially now. And the fact is, you know, the bottom line is he's had a few injuries over the last few years. So, like I said, hopefully he can recover, get his body right and come back and continue to play at a high level.
Can you see him continuing to go on? Because I look at some of these goalkeeping greats as they get older. I was looking at Kasper's stats the other day. You know, he's 36, 37 now. But I look at his performances really at the tournament and think there's no way he's stopping anytime soon.
Well, yeah. I mean, if he can get himself fit. You know, I think before this accident, I mean, yeah, I think Neuer, especially with the next Euros being in Germany, he would have been desperate to be part of that. Now we'll see. You know, he's got to come back, get fit, start playing, performing for Bayern again. But he will be desperate to play and captain his country at that next tournament. But yeah, goalkeepers at that age now, it's nothing, honestly. I mean, I'm 35, 36. I don't feel 35, 36, honestly, you know, so I can see these guys carrying on for many more years.
And I'm delighted to say we're going to have one of these.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper.
So I referenced earlier that you are, of course, a goal-scoring goalkeeper. What record still? Is that still held?
No, unfortunately not.
Is it gone?
No, it's gone. Yeah.
Who took it?
Tom King.
Oh, right.
That
yes.
goal kick, didn't he?
Was that not the EFL trophy or something?
Yeah. Pizza Hut thing, whatever it's called. Yeah, stupid thing. Not bitter at all, am I?
Oh, he's taking it. Okay, well, it's gone now. But we can still talk about goalkeepers scoring goals. And Jamie Sneddon did that for Partick Thistle. This was in injury time against Cove Rangers. It was last week, but because we've had a bit of a break, we have to reference it. Great goal.
Great goal. I looked at it on social media, and I mean, it wasn't even a fluke. He just proper placed it as well, took his run, got a position, so fantastic.
Lovely stuff. We love to see it. And we'll finish, actually, with a stat. So with every World Cup pod we've been doing, I've tried to throw out a little stat that hasn't been heard really anywhere else, or perhaps a stat that no one else can be bothered to research.
Love it.
So this one is the average age, a bit of a boring one really, but the average age of goalkeepers at the tournament. Can you throw out a guess for what you think it might be? I know this is quite a very specific question.
Starting goalkeepers, yeah.
Not all. No, this is all three, sorry. Sorry. And in some cases, four.
Oh, that's really good. Put the cats among the pigeons, yeah.
I should have done that as a separate one, actually.
27 and a half.
Close. So 29 and a half. You got the half, which I'm impressed with. The oldest is Mexico at just over 37 years of age. The average age of their three goalkeepers, just over 37. Wow. And the youngest is Ghana at just over 22. It's Cameroon and Spain after that. But that's quite young, isn't it? The oldest goalkeeper as well is Alfredo Talavera. That is Mexico, I believe. 40 years and 63 days. And the youngest is Simon Nabanduentbu from Cameroon, who's 19 years, 222 days.
Fair play.
There you go. There's something you never thought you'd know.
I like it. Thank you for sharing.
Well, Azmir, it's been nothing but a pleasure.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's nothing but a pleasure of mine as well.
I don't know where Rich is, so who knows? When are we back for the next podcast? I might be calling on you next week.
Well, you know, I'm sort of a super sub, so anytime you need me, I'll be there.
Azmir, thank you.
Thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers
away.